Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Morning is 4 minutes after the hour. I am that Bill Arnold, that name that was just mentioned. We have a great second hour coming up. Barb Bruce is going to be with us in just a minute. We're going to talk about worry, and it takes more than prayer to fight off worry. So she says, so we're going to discuss that with her. But to get our hearts and minds ready, I want to give you several verses here just to get up, set our interview with Barb up. Deuteronomy 31:8 says, "The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged." I love that. Psalm 34:17, "The righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles." And John 16:33 says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I've overcome the world." And Isaiah 41:10, don't we love this one? "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." That gives us some biblical verses just to kind of marinate on as we're going to have a conversation about worry. How many people are affected by worry and anxiety every day? I think a lot. So we're going to have a discussion with Barb Bruce in just a minute. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Paul says in Philippians, don't worry about anything. We always think about that, chew on it, but we don't know exactly how to do it. My guest this morning, Barb Bruce, has written a book on winning the worry battle, life's lessons from the book of Joshua. So we're going to have a conversation with her this morning. She's on our studio line. Good morning, Barb.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Worry is a big, big concern, big issue for so many.
Absolutely. The studies tell us the average person can worry 55 minutes per day.
Ooh, that's a lot of worry time. So what are the most common things people worry about?
Well, the most common things, a lot of people put them in the categories of like the 7 F's. We worry about family, finances. We worry about the future, fitness or our health, factory or work, friendships, and then there's always one of the F's that I always forget, but it is the things that we love and care about the most. And then on a macro level, people worry about terrorism and the economy and Social Security. Millennials worry about finances and in the future.
Mm-hmm. So this sounds like it's a pretty big battle, because everything you said, I could sort of put myself in those categories and go, yeah, I worry about that. I think about that. You know, so much of it is out of my control. Where does trust come in and turning our lives over to and surrender to Christ?
The battle to manage uncertainty is part of the inspiration behind the project, because I struggle with uncertainty. You talk about how you do. And for all of us, we don't know what the future looks like, and so we have a couple of choices. We can worry, which is where we have those negative mental movies that are constantly playing in our minds. I call them worry flicks, kind of like streaming Netflix, where you just can't stop thinking about negative, bad, worst-case scenarios, or wonder. And wonder is that posture where we go, okay, I don't know what the future lies, but instead of torturing myself, can I trust that God has a good plan for me? Because that's what he says.
I like that. Now, Barb, what's the difference between worry and anxiety? Because I hear people say, well, I've got this anxiety disorder now. And I go, how'd you get that? Was that worry that that mushroomed into something?
Medical professionals, they do define the two, even though they are similar. I was a pharmaceutical sales rep for years, and I sold an antidepressant, and I used to hear people in the office talk about their anxiety. In the book, anxiety, I tend to lean towards more of these physical effects. When you're struggling with anxiety, that's where you've got that racing heart rate. You've got that nauseous, sick feeling in your stomach. Maybe you just want to run away and hide or shut down. The sweaty palms, the inability to sleep. So anxiety leans towards the physical characteristics. Mentally, worry is that process in your mind where your thoughts jump to that worst-case scenario and you can't shut off the negative thinking, and it tortures you. It really, really tortures you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Barb, this is kind of a more of a complicated issue at times, because I think as Christians, we can be very reductionistic, where if you're worried, I'll say, well, just pray about it. And all of a sudden, is that enough? Or do we need more? Or do we need more tools? Or is that good enough?
Prayer is powerful. I've been a Christian most all of my life, got saved when I was 9, but I also taught myself to worry in high school. Mm. And over the years, people would say, Barb, just pray about it. And I prayed about it, and I still worried. And I felt so guilty, because I thought, God must be so disappointed with me because I'm a Christian, and just pray about it didn't work for me. And it wasn't until later, especially my daughter, actually, she is an Army soldier, and she's actually an officer. She went to West Point, and it occurred to me there that they give those soldiers learning to be warriors lots of tools, but they don't just drop them on the ground and walk away from them. They have to wake up every day and drill. So what I've discovered for me is the tools that God gives me, prayer, spirit-empowered courage, peace, and strength. Those tools are fantastic, but the difference between a warrior and a warrior is the amount of training that we put in to learn how to use those tools well.
Well said, Barb, because that is, it's so obvious that we need to rely on spiritual disciplines, and then we need to rely on certain training so we can enter the daily battle with sharpened tools, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the hard part for all of us is the training part. That's the part we don't love doing. My daughter doesn't love getting up every day at 5:30 a.m. and going and drilling and learning how. We don't love that part. We don't love waking up and doing our daily quiet time. Sitting in prayer for some of us is hard. But the difference between a warrior and a warrior who knows how to fight in faith is the daily training.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes the difference.
Yeah. Barb, is there a difference in the way men and women worry?
The manifestations of it can be different. At the beginning of the book, I talk about the 4 different kinds of warriors. So you've got the silent sufferer, the busybody, the control freak, and the mother hen. And that is geared towards women, but men can share those same characteristics. Men, however, theirs are going to be a little more demonstrative. And so a man suffering from anxiety, he may express a little more anger from not being able to control, where a woman could stuff. So there are a few differences, but what we share is that all of us struggle with it and that we cannot minimize our worry and anxiety. So for men out there, if you have those feelings, don't minimize them, because the impact on your life is just as real as it is on a woman's life.
Mm-hmm. Barb, if we have worry and anxiety, can that spin into a feeling of hopelessness?
Truly.
Okay.
It absolutely can. The psychologist Martin Seligman, he calls it the 3 P's. That when, you know, Romans 12:1-2, that we're supposed to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, and that God transforms us by changing the way we think. Well, worry is a pattern of thinking that becomes ingrained in us, and then that can lead us to what Seligman calls the 3 P's, pervasiveness, where we just think that we're always going to be in a horrible situation, and then there's this permanence, it'll never change, and then there is the other 3 P, that we can't do anything about it. And so the longer that you and I are in this pattern of worry, this learned helplessness, we then begin to live as if there is no hope, that God cannot help us. And that is a horrible place to live.
Indeed. Barb Bruce, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you about the three fighting friends a person should take with them into the battle with worry. Barb Bruce is my guest. She's the author of a book called Winning the Worry Battle. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Seventeen minutes after the hour, Barb Bruce is my most excellent guest this morning. She wrote a book called Winning the Worry Battle. And Barb, what are, if you can, tell us what the three fighting friends a person should take with them into the battle of worry.
The three fighting friends are three of those tools that God gives us.
Okay.
So peace, courage, and strength. And so those three fighting friends are actually taken from the first chapter of the book of Joshua. So those are based, those three friends stand with us every day. Peace is that security that we know that God is with us. Courage is the commitment that we can stand even when we're afraid, but we know that God is for us. And strength is the ability to hang in and hang on for as long as we need to. And so those three fighting friends are the tools that God gives us. And those tools become better the more we train and the more we practice with them.
Mm-hmm. Barb, it seems like a lot of verses on worry show up in the New Testament. You've written your book, though, and kind of focused your study on worry out of the book of Joshua. Would you say more about that?
Yes. I have always admired Joshua, one of my favorite people in the Bible, because he was a leader and he had this really great faith. But again, that first chapter of the book of Joshua, I was part of a weekend series and actually went skydiving because it was something courageous.
Is that jumping out of a plane?
But when I looked in the
skydiving?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
yes,
you lost me there.
Inspired me to jump out of a plane.
Right. That's where you lost me.
But you know what I discovered in the very first chapter? There's a section of verses in the very first 10 verses, and it's Joshua chapter 1, verses 6 through 9.
Mm-hmm.
And in those four verses, three times God says, be strong and courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was quite a unique thing to say to a man who was a valiant warrior and leader. And then God says, do not be afraid or discouraged. And when he tells Joshua that first, I felt better. Because I love the fact that God reassured a man to me that seemed to be a pillar of faith, which meant that was hope for me. But the fact that God said those things to Joshua over and over again, I had to explore whether or not Joshua might have been fighting his own worry battle.
Interesting. All right, Barb, talk about uncertainty, because I think that's part of what causes so much worry, is this uncertainty we have in our lives. But God has a view and a perspective about uncertainty, which is different from ours, isn't it?
Truly, for me, uncertainty feels like a cliffhanger. Do you remember those shows we used to watch as when we were growing up? And at the end of every season on the television show, the person would literally be hanging off of a cliff. And our lives feel that way sometimes. So for us, when we don't know if our spouse is going to want to stay in the marriage, when we don't know if our child is going to get sober, when we don't know if we're going to lose our job, we feel like we're dangling off the edge. But for God, he has no cliffhangers.
Right.
And the thing I've had to in my life's journey, I've had to realize that I can't know everything that God knows, and I don't want to know everything that God knows. But can I trust God with the information or the circumstances that he's given me? And can I trust that he will give me what I need along the way? And that's really, that unfolds in the book of Joshua. For every challenge that they face, God gives them the information that they need one step at a time, one campaign at a time.
Mm-hmm. Barb, God has access to information about our lives that we don't have.
Truly. And God says that in Deuteronomy, right before the Israelites enter into the promised land, at the end of Deuteronomy, Moses is talking to the people and he says, God has secrets that are known to no one and that we are only to be accountable for what God gives us.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about it. If God told you everything that was going to happen in your life over the next 10 years, would you not spend the next 10 years worrying about everything that was about to happen?
Totally. or not get out of bed. One of the two.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in many ways, it's God's kindness that he tells us to stand with him, to be strong and courageous, for the Lord God is with you wherever you go. That is a much better deal than me knowing what's going to happen next. I'd rather have God standing with me and for me in every circumstance, real or imagined. That's the definition of victory, rather than me know details.
Yeah.
I want to know victory versus knowing details.
All right, Barb, here's something I would like you to explain. You said the fear of our fear is actually our worry.
Oh, yes. So remember how I told you I jumped out of an airplane?
Yes.
That was because the people I was working with wanted me to touch a tarantula. I am so afraid of spiders that I jumped out of an airplane instead of touching a tarantula. That's how afraid of spiders I am.
Uh-huh.
However, it was my fear of spiders that God used to show me the relationship between fear and worry. If you think of a spider's body, the center of the body is our fear. The legs of a spider are all of the fears that branch off of that fear. So if a person is afraid of losing their job, that's the center. But worry are the what ifs. What if I can't make my house payment? What if we have to move? What if I can't find? So when we think about our fear, all of the other fears off of that fear become the legs. And it also gave me insight as to why the Bible has hundreds of verses about do not fear, do not be afraid. Because God knew that if we could handle our fears, then that's how we are able to really cut the legs off of our worry.
Okay. Now, I know in your book you've given some practical techniques for helping us sort of wake up and apply principles to not worry or to worry less. Can you share some of those?
Yes. One of my very favorites at the beginning of the book is called the Calm Technique. And there are techniques in most every chapter because, again, I want folks to be able to learn how to drill. So the calm technique, when we are all freaked out, when we're all riled up, we know we should pray, but our bodies won't let us. Our minds are racing. So calm technique is to reduce our physical symptoms so that we can reconnect with God. The C stands for count to five, but it's not just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 because I used to try that and that didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, it's inhale on the one, just inhale deeply, and exhale Mississippi. And you do it slowly up to a count of five. So inhale one, exhale Mississippi. Inhale two, exhale Mississippi. And that helps to reduce the heart rate, and it also interrupts that worry flicks. The A stands for acknowledge God. Once our heart rate reduces and our mind stops racing, we just say, you know what, God, I know you are here with me right now. The L stands for list your need. We tell God what's going on. We can be honest about our fears. We can be honest about our worries with God. And then the M is meditate. And the meditation, if you worry, you already know how to meditate because you know how to think about things over and over again. So what we're going to meditate on is, God, you are here and you will take care of this. God, you are here, you will take care of me. I use the calm technique on myself. I use it with the people I know. Parents, this is a great tool to teach your kids. And there are a lot of other really simple tools like that in the book. There's another tool. If you're worried about someone in your life and their problems are keeping you up at night, there's tools for that. There's tools for how to get your day started to build a healthy train of thought. So all of these things are based in Scripture, inspired by Joshua, to help us drill to win over worry.
I love it. Are there any other resources that go along with the book? It sounds like this is are filled with many useful things that I would like to start doing myself starting today.
Oh, wonderful. Well, yes, there is a separate Bible study called Joshua. So I actually wrote a separate Bible study. It is a 6-week Bible study. It's 5 days a week. And it is an in-depth Bible study on the book of Joshua. It is a fascinating book to study because it is the summary of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So for those who are looking for a great summer Bible study, for a summer group or your own independent study, the book of Joshua, there is a Bible study, and it's also Winning the Worry Battle. I have some other tools and techniques there, but it is very much the Bible study on the powerful book of Joshua.
Barb, thank you so much for coming on the show, and blessings to you and your husband, Matt, and your three daughters. Thank you so much for being on the show. You can go to Barb Roose, ROOSE.com, to find out more about that and visit her webpage and hopefully buy her book called Winning the Worry Battle, Life's Lessons from the Book of Joshua by Barb Roose. Thank you very much, Barb.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Have a great day. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Morning, it's 32 minutes after the hour. Thank you for being with me this morning. We'll take a little break for news. Gregory Wright Stone, who's a geologist and the author of Inconvenient Facts, is going to be my guest in about 6 minutes. Be right back. Good morning. It's 24 minutes until the top of the hour. It's hard to empathize with someone if you've labeled them. I know I've labeled you. You're the most awesome supporters of Faith Radio and listeners. Couldn't love you more. But David Capes, who's a radio host and author, he talks about this, labeling people, and encourages listening over labeling.
I'm afraid that sometimes those labels are conversation stoppers. And when you label people too quickly, you end up, I think, closing off any kind of conversation, closing off any kind of listening that can take place. You've spoken, but you've not really listened to what they are saying. And it's very easy to say, well, this person's a this or this person's a that. And all of a sudden, you've got a handle on it, and so I don't have anything else I can learn. I think labeling is a dangerous thing. Accepting what people say about themselves. Say, if a person says, I am a Christian, I'm a follower of Jesus, listen to that. Don't try to force them into some other. I have friends who are atheists or agnostics. If they label themselves, that's fine. But I think it's hard for us, it's difficult for us, and probably wrong for us to start labeling other people particularly quickly.
If you want to hear more of that interview, head over to myfaithradio.com. And the author's name is David Capes, with a C-A-P-E-S, David Capes. You can find that there. It's pretty easy. It's quite well organized. Now, just go check it out. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
When it comes to giving kids the freedom to make their own choices, are you afraid your children will make mistakes? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Let me ease your mind. Your kids will mess up. There's no doubt about it. But here's the good thing. It'll give you plenty to talk about. Use their mistakes as an opportunity to help them make better decisions in the future. Let the foolish decision be useful. When your son or daughter blows it, this is your chance to value them and love them even through the pain of their mistakes. Do you think your kids aren't ready to make their own choice? Of course they're not. But your teen's mistakes can be excellent teachers.
Having trouble parenting your teen in today's rapidly changing culture? Mark Gregston can help. Get instant access to Mark's new free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
It is 21 minutes until the top of the hour. Gregory Wrightstone is my guest. He's a geologist with more than 35 years of experience researching and studying various aspects of the Earth's processes. He is a strong proponent of the scientific process and believes that policy decisions should be driven by science, facts, and data, not a political agenda. He's already my kind of guy. Good morning, Gregory.
Yeah, that's pretty radical, though, isn't it?
It's very radical.
It appears that science actually in government and the climate change debate is driving the argument. Unfortunately, it's political science.
Yeah. Now, the climate change, that's an issue, but we can exaggerate it to the point where it's just not helpful.
It is, and I don't want you or your listeners, don't be deny what's happening. We are adding CO2.
Mm-hmm.
CO2 necessarily, since it's a greenhouse gas, has to have some warming effect on the atmosphere. I would argue that it's it's relatively minor and completely overwhelmed by the same natural forces that have been driving it since the dawn of time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we see that the CO2, the big overarching theme in my book and what I've been writing about recently is the overwhelmingly positive benefits of a warming planet and increasing CO2, and it's not even close. It's what we see is an Earth that's it's greening, it's thriving, it's prospering. We're seeing great things happen because of warming and temperature. We're growing more crops. The Earth is greening and prospering, and that's something your listeners you just don't hear this in the mainstream media.
No, you certainly don't. If we can talk a little bit about the outrage that came from President Trump withdrawing from the Paris Accord, talk a little bit about that, because that caused outrage.
Yeah, I praised him in the summary of my book. The title of my summary was The Benefits of Principled Inaction. In other words, we shouldn't be doing things that will cripple us economically for only marginal benefits. If we look at if all of the countries on Earth enacted the Paris Climate Accord, it would have again, CO2 is warming the atmosphere a moderate amount, not much at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, it's overwhelmed. If we enact all of the Paris Climate Accords, and even assuming everything that people like Al Gore and Dr. Michael Mann at Penn State want, the minimal amount of warming that it would spare is meaningless, really. So I praise in the summary, I praise Donald Trump for doing that, because the Paris Climate Accords, it's estimated Bjorn Lomborg from the University of Copenhagen estimates that it would cost the Western world $1.5 trillion in lost economic activity and lost dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge economic burden.
Yeah, we certainly need to find solutions that are a little bit less expensive than that, don't we?
We do. And again, what we've seen, though, is we look time and time again. In the last half of the book, I deal with what I call the climate apocalypse events. And you know, you and your listeners have heard of them. You know, the predictions of drought, of increasing fires, of intense heat waves. There was even a report a few weeks ago about how warming was causing amphibians to become dumber, that toenail fungus will increase, that poison ivy will actually poison
now you got
ivy
my attention.
May well. Yeah, poison ivy actually might increase.
Yeah.
That was one I started looking at, because CO2 fertilization is going to benefit all plants on Earth.
Uh-huh.
And so that was when I started. I was going, oh, come on, that can't. And then I started thinking about it, and I said, well, you know what? CO2 benefits all the plants on Earth, and there's no reason why poison ivy might not benefit from it too. So what we are seeing is this overall beneficial aspect of our changing climate.
Yeah, we've certainly made carbon dioxide out to be the villain, and it's really not, is it?
Oh, I just wrote an op-ed last week. It was called, the title was, I Love Carbon Dioxide and You Should Too. It was picked up by the American Thinker. I have another op-ed that was right before that that was called How Green Is My Planet? A Prospering Earth Debunks the Notion of Pending Climate Doom. So you get where I'm coming from.
I do.
And actually, I've got some great buttons, I Heart CO2 buttons. I've got some bumper stickers, I Heart CO2 bumper stickers. It causes environmentalists' heads to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've got another op-ed coming out this morning in the Daily Caller on wind energy, how Pennsylvania actually, just last week, and I'm from Pennsylvania, banned wind turbines on all their state properties because of the environmental impacts.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about renewable energy and some of the, like the wind and solar energy. What is the future of that, and where does it stand right now? What percentage of the world's energy is coming from wind and solar?
Yeah, I don't have that at my fingertips.
Okay.
I'm not an energy expert. So
yeah.
I'm gonna as they say in the NFL, I'm gonna take a knee on that question, because I don't want to talk about things I'm not an expert or competent in. Because I don't want to say something that's incorrect. But I will say that I don't like wind energy.
Okay.
I mean, have you been around any of these things?
I've seen them. I've seen the wind energy, but I never know exactly who's benefiting from it.
Well, the Pennsylvania Commission determined that it was not only dangerous, but it ran contrary to their principles of protecting the earth and the resources, because mm-hmm. they said it was very harmful for hunters, for wildlife, and much of the area would have to be off limits to any hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Gregory. Your interest might be interested to know why I wrote the book, because I am a geologist, and I heard a lot of contradictory things. And like many of your listeners, I was skeptical. And I knew that as a geologist, some of the things we're being told about climate change were just flat out wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that others were. So the book really started out as a search for the truth.
Yeah.
And it's this search for the truth that really led to this, to the book and what we've got today.
Yeah, I love it. Let me take a break, Gregory. When I come back, we'll continue our conversation with Gregory Wrightstone. He's the author of Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. We'll find out some of those when we return. 13 minutes till the top of the hour. Minutes until the top of the hour. Gregory Wrightstone is my guest. He's a geologist, which is a very cool subject. Took a geology class in college. I think I got a B, maybe a C. All right, but anyway, he's written a book called Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. Now scientists, they're data-driven, and politicians are agenda-driven. It seems that there's a lot of scientists that support the evidence that there is global warming, so we're all understanding that to be true, but we're having different views of opinion as to how we manage that challenge and deal with it. What has Al Gore said that what does he want us to know?
Oh boy, he wants you to think that our actions, mainly burning of fossil fuels, are leading to terrible consequences and apocalyptic events.
Okay.
That the Earth is spiraling into a climate hell, if you would, and it's just not. And maybe this is appropriate now to talk. I believe you're familiar with Calvin Beisner and the Cornwall Alliance.
Oh yeah, I know Calvin.
So Calvin, and frankly, it's my bad, but I never heard of them before, and
okay.
He contacted me, and he said, Greg, your book fully aligns with our philosophy, and basically their philosophy, if I can paraphrase it, is that we should use all of God's creation for the betterment of mankind,
mm-hmm.
doing it as good stewards of the environment. Well, who could argue that? And it was that contact from Calvin that really caused me to realize what the overarching theme of the book was, because I believe I was just too close when I was writing it that I didn't really see that the overarching theme is that of a prospering Earth and a prospering of humanity. And that's what we should try and do is use God's resources, be it fossil fuels or whatever that might be. And if fossil fuels were leading to these catastrophic consequences, then we should really reconsider using them.
Mm-hmm.
But the evidence doesn't point to that.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence points to a great prospering of the Earth and a benefiting of humanity. We're growing because of increasing CO2 and warmth, we're growing more crops. We're able to feed more people. Isn't that a good thing?
I think that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
I like it.
This is a huge, huge unreported story about how we're really benefiting. And I mean, we're growing more crops because of CO2 fertilization effect. And we're also benefiting from temperatures have been rising for more than 300 years. The rise in temperature leads to longer growing seasons, so we have more plantings we can do. Killer frosts stop earlier in the spring and arrive later in the fall. all these things are leading towards benefits. We also see a huge story is increasing soil moisture content around the world. Because warming temperatures means that more water vapors in the atmosphere, which then leads to more precipitation. And also plants don't use as much water due to increased CO2 fertilization. And, and one thing I'd like to do for your listeners is empower them. I'm offering your listeners a PowerPoint of the top 25 figures in the book. There are 90 full-color figures in the book. I picked out 25 of the best. These are all originals from base data from NASA, NOAA, and the like. If they go to my website, inconvenientfacts.xyz, hit the subscribe button, and I'll send them a link. You don't have to buy anything. Because really what I wanted to do with this book was to empower people, to give them the facts and the data that they really need to make a decision and to, and get sort through the contradictory information that they hear. And I think these PowerPoints, they can convert that easily to a JPEG to use on Facebook or any of the social media sites.
Greg, it seems like you get shut down really quickly if you want to have a conversation about climate change because there's so many people so passionate about it that they don't really choose to want a dialogue. Oh, you're one of those people. So how do we build bridges?
Well, first by I disarm people originally because if you start out the gate acknowledging that climate change is happening, you know, the way to say that, it's been happening since the dawn of time. Because and I like to use that word because, you know, we have new earthers and old earthers, and I'm not going to say, but and I always use since the dawn of time. And it has been. We've been in a warming period and also acknowledge that the CO2 we're adding has some slight warming effect, but it's greatly overwhelmed by the same natural forces that have been driving temperatures since the dawn of time. And that's a good way to talk about this, but you are right. You just, you can't have a conversation with so many of these people. It's a religion to them, and it's like me telling you that Jesus Christ never existed. You go, and you'd immediately, right?
Right, of course.
You would immediately respond poorly, and that's almost what it's like when you talk to these people and confront this idea that fossil fuels are bad. And it really is. There's just a visceral reaction I get from people, and it's I try and go on Facebook sites, but these pro-environmental, pro-alarmist people, they tend to go right to vile and hateful. And it's not nice.
No, we're not.
I don't respond likewise. But I usually just tell them I love them and hope they have a nice day. So I don't know how you have it. I think I'm seeing a sea change in the discussion around the Earth and around this subject. And I think it starts with Donald Trump and pulling us out of the Paris Climate Accords. And I've been speaking at scientific organizations. I spoke recently to a group of geologists, probably 150 or so in West Virginia, and I was very warmly received. My message, the general reaction that I got was one with people coming up afterwards and shaking my hand vigorously.
Oh, wonderful.
There was an overflow crowd. There was several other talks going on at the same time, but they had to squeeze everybody into my room with standing room only. So there was great, great interest among other scientists about this.
Yeah. Well, Greg, let me just alert the listeners. Is it inconvenientfacts.xyz? Is that where we go?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Inconvenientfacts.xyz for their hit the subscribe, and I'll send you a PowerPoint. You can buy the book there. There's a $5 off promo code.
Yep.
We just got – actually, the books just recently got into the Barnes & Noble brick-and-mortar stores.
Nice.
That's big, huge. And we're getting a lot of – look for my op-eds. I've got one coming out on the FoxNews.com, one in the Daily Caller today.
Excellent.
Quite a few out there.
Yeah, I'll head into Barnes & Noble and pick up your book and walk around going, hey, I know this guy.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Have a great day, Greg. You bet.
All right, bye.
Yep. Greg Wrightstone has been my guest. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show. Have a great day. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.